A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there were two nerds on separate sides of the country that grew up with fandom.
And this is their story.
Yeah, so we've been goofing off with each other about Star Wars and Star Trek since the early days of Mac Power Users. I think this goes back to like 2009. I don't know when we first talked about it on the show. If somebody knows, I'd love to hear, but I know it goes back a long way.
Yeah. So I guess we should introduce ourselves, because conceivably people could be listening to this Relay Special Edition show who don't listen to our show.
Okay, let's do it.
So I'm Katie Floyd, and he's David Sparks.
And we're the Mac Power Users. We've been podcasting about getting better at using your Apple software and hardware since 2009. And we're happy to be part of Relay. And we wish it a happy birthday.
Yeah. And we almost always, not a show goes by without some kind of reference to our beloved Star Trek or Star Wars. And so we figured what would be fitting for this 2-year anniversary show than to talk a little bit about our fandom and how we came to this. Because I think you and I both agree, David, that although we do have very kind of boring day jobs as attorneys, although I don't think it's that boring, honestly, I think my love of Star Trek has really shaped my life. It certainly has shaped me culturally. And I think I'm a better person because of it.
So let's start with you then. Tell me, how did little Katie Floyd become a Star Trek fan?
So I was not even born. I was not around when the original Star Trek debuted in the 60s. My exposure to Star Trek, I feel very fortunate that I was exposed to Star Trek in what I consider the proper order. The original series, then The Next Generation, then Deep Space Nine, then Voyager, and all the movies in the proper order. Because I was exposed to Star Trek fairly young when the original series was in syndication. And it was in syndication, and it was that show that was on at just the right sweet spot between like 5 and 6 in the afternoons when my mom was getting home from work. My dad wasn't yet home. And it was okay for us to watch TV because my mom had just gotten home and she was, you know, in the middle of prepping dinner and it wasn't quite family time yet. So we had been home from school. And at this point, it was just me. My brother was too young, although my brother joined me several years later. And he has now become quite the geek in his own right. And that was the time that it was okay for us to watch TV, and Star Trek happened to be on between the 5 and 6 o'clock hour on Fox 51. And that's what we watched. And it was, I think it was a show that mom felt it was okay for us to watch. And it was a little bit hokey, but I was a little bit young and didn't really know how hokey it was. And kind of grew up watching Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock and Dr. McCoy and all of the rest of them, you know, battle. Klingons were bad guys when I was little.
It's interesting to me when you say Fox 51, because that means you had cable at the time.
Well, Fox is actually a network here, but yes, we did.
But I mean, because when I was a little kid, I watched Star Trek as well, and we didn't, it was kind of before cable took off, and there were like 3 or 4 channels. So like when you got sick, there was like a rotation. It was like Hazel, not the app, but actually the show.
And the housekeeper that Hazel's based on.
Yeah, and Green Acres, which made me want to hurt myself. And then Star Trek and Twilight Zone. And so it's like there was only 4 shows, really, or Gilligan's Island. That was the other one. But there was like a few shows you could watch as a kid. So you didn't really have a choice. Star Trek was there for you. But you had a lot of other options, but you still landed on Star Trek.
Well, we didn't have a ton of other options. Although, yes, cable was a thing. You know, we had pretty basic cable. We didn't have a lot of frills when I was a kid. I mean, don't get me wrong. We had everything that we needed. But, you know, when I was a kid, like the Disney Channel was a premium channel that you had to pay for. And we didn't have that when I was a kid. We didn't have all the Cartoon Networks when I was a kid because those were part of the expanded packages. And not that I'm saying that was a bad thing. I mean, it was fine because I got to watch Star Trek. And so in many ways, I feel very blessed for that experience. But we didn't, you know, my parents always make sure we had everything we needed, but we didn't have a lot of extra frills. And So, you know, that was channel 13 on the TV, but we didn't go a whole lot higher than that.
How old were you when you were like sinking into Star Trek?
So I meant to look some of this up before we started the show, but I would say this would be late elementary, early middle school age, because I remember when The Next Generation premiered and I was familiar enough with the Star Trek universe that I was interested in that.
Yeah. And so what was it about that original show that got little young Katie Floyd into it so much?
I think it was, by the way, The Next Generation premiered in 1987. So yeah, this would be the mid 80s is probably when this, the mid to late 80s took place. The first, as you know, the first couple of seasons of The Next Generation were not particularly memorable. It got a lot better in season three. But so yeah, I would say this would be the mid to late 80s when I was starting to look at this. And I think what interested me in it is it wasn't a quote unquote kid show. It was a show that a kid could understand. And I certainly got a lot more out of it as I rewatched them as a young adult and as an adult. But it was entertaining. It was a good story. It was a story that my parents were okay with us watching. But I kind of felt like a little adult when I was watching this. And then I one of my very vivid memories is when The Next Generation, I started watching that when there was the cliffhanger for The Best of Both Worlds. And that was the season three to season four cliffhanger when Captain Picard was abducted by the Borg, and they actually turned him into a Borg. And, you know, Commander Riker has to give the order to destroy the Borg cube.
Locutus.
Yeah, Locutus, which, spoiler alert, he doesn't, and it fails, and Captain Picard is okay, because they go on to make four more seasons and a whole lot of movies. But I remember that summer between season three and season four, I was probably in middle school at that point, like, being really worried about it. Like, not, you know, it was enough that it was on my mind, but I wasn't quite old enough to get like, Katie, these are actors with contracts and they're not going to kill Patrick Stewart because his contract runs another four seasons. It's going to be okay. You know?
Yeah. But that shot of him with the little red laser, I think it was over his right ear, man, that was scary.
Yeah.
I could see how that would freak you out.
Yeah.
I was an aerospace engineering student for a little while in my life. And I remember, my friends and I in around 87, seeing that the Next Generation was coming out, and we all got kind of excited about it. So I was with you. I wasn't as big of a Star Trek fan as you are. As we'll talk about in the next segment, I had something else that already got my love and devotion.
I feel kind of like I grew up with Star Trek. I mean, The Next Generation was on when I was like in middle school and high school. And then there was Deep. They all overlapped in that series. They all overlapped. The last couple of seasons of Next Generation overlapped with the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine, and then the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine overlapped with the first, or the last couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine overlapped with the first couple of seasons of Voyager. But Voyager and Deep was really my coming of age Star Trek, and that was so meaningful to me. Because I'm going out, I'm going to be an attorney, I'm going out on my own. It's kind of this, and here you have Kate Mulgrew portraying, you know, the first woman captain in the Star Trek series.
And arguably one of the best captains.
I really thought she was, because I thought she was my favorite captain, not just because she was a woman, but because she was, I thought, the best blend between the Kirk and Picard. You know, she was smart, she was intelligent, she was a scientist, but she could get down and dirty and fight with the boys too. And she was really my captain, partially because she was a woman, partially because she was coming of age as a captain at the same time that I was coming into an adulthood. And so I think for many reasons, although I love The Next Generation, I think Voyager was really my series.
Now, have you gone back and watched it since it originally ran?
I have. A couple of years ago, I went back and watched The Next Generation all the way through, and I've also watched Voyager all the way through. I'm trying to get through Deep Space Nine. Those are a little bit harder to get through.
Those are deep. I mean, excuse the pun. Yeah,
they are. I mean, they're heavy. They're heavy. Can I tell you, I had such a crush on Dr. Bashir. I mean, at this point, I was probably in high school, and I was just so head over heels for him.
That guy is dreamy.
He was. He's so dreamy.
Yeah, he was in Game of Thrones. You know that?
I did not know that. I might have to get HBO for that. I had posters of him on my wall.
You don't want to see it, Katie.
No, it was bad. Posters of him on my wall when I was a high school girl. I mean, that was kind of geeky. I mean, I'm sure lots of high school girls have posters of hunky men on their wall, but probably not of Star Trek men. Is that, that's, I'm, oh my gosh, the feedback I'm going to get. I shouldn't have said, yeah.
You know what? I bet you get a lot of feedback from people who also had posters of Dr. Bashir, because he was pretty dreamy.
Well, or people who had posters of Gates McFadden or Marina Sirtis or, you know, other people. But yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's kind of my Star Trek origin story. What about you? You have a different origin story.
Yeah, it's, you know, 8 years old when Star Wars came out. And I, you know, I was an 8 year old. I liked to play, and I had no conception of what was going on in the rest of the world until one of my sisters got the soundtrack for Star Wars, the record before. I mean, I didn't even know the movie was out. You know, it just, I was so, when I was a kid, I just was outdoors playing all the time. I wasn't really connected to much. And so I heard this music. I'm like, that music's really good. And my sister said, you should go see the movie. So my friends and I went and saw the Star Wars movie. And it's like an inflection point for my life. I don't know how else to put it. I guess, you know, when you're 8 years old, you're very, you're very suggestible, I guess.
Right.
Just like you were a certain age when you, and I think a lot of the love you and I have for these franchises stems back to
the time that they came into our lives.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and you know, I grew up in a fairly religious family and all that, but Star Wars to me just it resonated on so many levels. And you know, going back, it's not an accident. You know, George Lucas was reading the Joseph Campbell books and the Hero's Journey, and there was a lot of thought that went into the way that story was told. I totally agree with all the Star Trek fans who say Star Wars isn't real science fiction and blah blah blah, but it's some kind of weird combination of a science fiction and fantasy and a cowboy movie and a samurai movie. It's just some kind of weird thing in a blender that George Lucas managed to put together and just make something that resonated with me so hard. And I wasn't alone, obviously. So I didn't get to see it every day though. I mean, we didn't have any money when I grew up. Well, I shouldn't say that, but we didn't have a lot of money. So my parents were like, if you see a movie once, then you've seen the movie. You know, you don't need to see it again. So you saw it once and you just walked out of there and it was like, I don't know, it's like an 8-year-old version of an acid trip or something. You walk out of there and it's like this blur in your head. And my friends and I immediately started copying it, you know, and we would watch anything that came on TV in reference to Star Wars. We even watched that crazy Lucas Christmas show.
I found that on YouTube and watched it. And I'm like, that's 2 hours of my life I'll never get back.
Yeah, it's kind of a whole side story. Lucas, I guess the network wanted to capitalize on Star Wars success. And somehow Lucas begrudgingly agreed to do a Christmas special. If you're not super into the stuff, this may be news to you.
It's horrible. Don't watch it.
At one point, George Lucas, like later in life, thought he had like purchased almost every VHS copy of this in the world. You know, he was trying to make it like, it's like old Soviet. He was trying to make it like where it just no longer existed, you know, like he unpersoned this movie. And of course a copy landed on YouTube and then the game was up. And you can go watch it and you make some popcorn and watch it. It's terrible. But the fact is we were so hungry for this stuff. They didn't have any toys. I mean, which is kind of funny because now the Star Wars movies comes out, the toys are out 6 months in advance. But when I was a kid, I mean, I don't think anybody expected it to blow up the way it did. But they didn't have any toys. So I used to use cardboard wrapping paper tubes, you know, like the stuff you use to wrap.
Those are lightsabers, man.
That was my lightsaber. The problem is if you'd whack your buddy with it a couple times, it would break because cardboard isn't really the best saber material. So then we'd wrap them in duct tape.
Yeah, and you'd spend like $10 in duct tape and your parents would be upset. I've done that.
I'd go out to my dad's garage. My dad had a well-stocked garage and he wouldn't mind. And, you know, but we'd start bruising each other because the things would basically turn into baseball bats at some point. But man, we lived the life. And then I would go when my sister wasn't home. She had like a Sears record player with a speaker on a wire and I'd open her window And then I would stick the speaker in the window, the screen in the window, and we would turn up the record all the way, and we'd go out in the front yard, and it was on, you know, and we had so much fun. We had so much fun reliving that stuff. I just really connected with it. And I was a nerdy kid, surprise, surprise. And I found other nerdy kids that were into it like me. I tell my kids, my childhood was a lot like, if you ever saw the movie E.T., you know, we didn't have an alien in our life, but just the whole, you know, playing Dungeons and Dragons and riding your bikes everywhere and basically being accountable to no one. There was no cell phones or pagers. We just went out and we came back when it was dark. And it was really a great childhood, and Star Wars made it even better. But the strange thing for me was I didn't have a daily television show to watch. I didn't have like the influx of it. Like kids today can, you know, Force Awakens, you can watch it every day you want, but like the videos didn't come out for years after the movies were released. And so in a lot of ways, Star Trek was what we had created in our heads of remembering. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I remember because we, you know, we had VHS tapes and they were so expensive to buy. Even when they did come out, I mean, it was $50, $60 to buy a VHS tape. And finally, my parents would buy a couple of them. Because we would go down to the rental store, and this was like pre-Blockbuster. We had a very, it was called Video World. We had a very small rental store that was down on the corner, and we would rent these, and I would always rent the same movies over and over again. It was, you know, the Star Trek movies. I knew exactly where they were. And it was like, at some point you've just rented it so much that you might as well just buy it, you know?
Well, I mean, in the early days of Star Wars, they weren't even available. And then you always knew somebody that had some like bootleg 8mm, you know, terrible version of it. Like I had a friend who had a friend, and like we planned this for weeks. We rode our bikes like 10 miles to this guy's house, and he had like 5 minutes of the trench run on like 8mm. So we would literally loop a projector and watch it over and over again. And you know, it was just such a weird time in my life, but boy, was it fun. And I think I really connected to the kind of the spiritual side of it. I mean, I thought the Force was real. I remember being a little kid and swearing that I moved a pencil with the Force, you know, and anybody my age that was of sufficient geekery, I almost guarantee they at least tried to use the Force once.
Yeah, you know? I've tried to use the Force.
And
I keep thinking I'm going to be that one person that it works for.
Yeah, well, you know, midichlorians or whatever, right? And maybe you have more.
I don't believe in the midichlorians.
There we go. We'll get to that maybe later. But it was really just a wonderful thing. And I will forever be thankful to George Lucas for getting that movie made. When you hear the backstory of all the trouble they had trying to get it made and all the stuff they had to invent to pull it off, and they weren't even sure it would work. And boy, did it work with me, because I latched onto that like a baby duck to its mama. To this day, I still have a very warm place in my heart for Star Wars.
And we should mention that I love Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek is my heart. It is my favorite. But I'm also a huge Star Wars fan. I cannot imagine a world without Star Wars. I know that there's so many people who, you know, pick one, Star Trek or Star Wars. I enjoy both. And I know you are kind of in the same position as well.
Yeah, I am. I'm definitely more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan, without a doubt. But I totally understand Star Trek and like the idea of the optimism of Star Trek. I love the idea of it, that in the future, we're going to get past all these problems. You know, we're not going to be, I don't want to get political, but I mean, we're as a planet, we're going to become a lot more unified and multicultural and willing to work with each other. And, but I love that idea. So that always attracted me. I mean, I didn't say earlier, but where Star Trek really got its hooks into me was when I was going through law school, because I was watching The Next Generation every night at 7. That was my break from the rest of the world. And I love Captain Picard because of that. Who is your, so is Janeway your favorite captain?
Yeah, Janeway's my captain.
Yeah.
What about you? Is it Picard?
Yeah, it's Picard. Definitely.
Right. So Star Wars characters, I don't know if I have a favorite. I'm kind of partial to, it's kind of hard at some point to separate the characters from the actors, but I'm kind of partial to Leia. But I have a feeling, are you a Han Solo guy?
No, I'm not. I am I am a disciple of the Jedi Church. I think I really love the Jedi in general. I like the idea of them. But I don't think I have a favorite character. I have a lot. I love Yoda. That's one of my favorite characters. I mean, he's like this.
Yeah, he's kind of your spirit guide.
Yeah, I just like the way he's like the he's like, I heard him described once by Frank Oz as he's like the Zen master who will eat the last cookie on the table, you know. And I like the Yoda in the original trilogy was like that. He was very whimsical and fun, you know. I think the Yoda in the prequels, I don't like him as much, but I really like Yoda. I like the way he talks. And as a kid, like, I took seriously everything he said, you know. Try, always he said, do or do not, there is no try. I mean, I was like a little kid, but I would think about that while I was doing my math homework, you know. I mean, so he had an effect on me. I've always liked Obi-Wan because I feel like he's somebody who always tries to do the right thing, and that's kind of an inspiration to me. So I have several favorite characters in the new movie. I really love Rey. I just love her so much.
Yeah, and, I like Rey.
And then, you know, who doesn't love the droids? I had a friend that worked with LucasArts and said that, you know, they would always get, you know, they'd send characters to the hospitals or whatever. And, you know, people would love to see Darth Vader or whoever show up. But if the droids show up, the kids would just lose it because who doesn't relate to those droids so much? I have a lot of favorite characters. I'm interesting because I, you know, it's funny because some people like to, there's different political affiliations in the Star Wars universe. Some people just love to say, I love the dark side and I love, you know, Darth Vader and all that stuff. And then there's some people who like are big into the Mandalorians, you know, Boba Fett and all those guys. But for me, it's always the Jedi. I'm super on Team Jedi.
Yeah. I think one of the things that really connected for me about the Star Trek universe, and it really goes back to the actors in the individual series, is some of them connected so well. And I think you especially saw that in The Next Generation and in Voyager. Those two casts really connected well and gelled well. And, you know, if you read some of the behind the scenes stuff, there's always some drama. But I think you feel that universally, those casts just came together and gelled in a way. And as a result, you could see that on screen.
Yeah, I agree.
Some of the other series, you know, you hear about the drama between some of the actors and they didn't really like each other and so-and-so thinks so-and-so is a jerk and, you know, someone who's doing this with somebody else and all of these other things were going on. And I think you can tell. I think you can feel that tension and it comes across on the screen. But I think those are two reasons that I really love The Next Generation and in Voyager. You kind of feel like you're watching a family, and it's hard to choose a favorite because they're, you know, certainly, you know, the captain tends to lead the ship, but they're really a great ensemble crew. And I think there've been a few shows. The West Wing is another one of those, I think, where the ensemble has really come together to make everyone, the whole greater than each of the individuals.
Yeah, I came into, like I said, Next Generation, I think in the second or third season. Like, for me, that Borg cliffhanger was the first big cliffhanger for me where I was really invested in Star Trek. When I went back and watched the first couple seasons, I didn't enjoy them as much.
Yeah, one and two are tough.
It took them a while to find the rhythm.
That, you know, that brings me to an interesting topic that we can probably talk about. These two series, much like many other series, have gone through reiterations where ultimately they had to be taken away from their creators. Gene Roddenberry was the visionary behind the original Star Trek and really spearheaded season one and two of The Next Generation. And I think you can argue that The Next Generation really didn't come into its own and it really did not flourish until season three when he stepped back and another group of showrunners stepped in and started changing things a little bit. And you have spoken about how George Lucas did this amazing thing with the original Star Wars trilogy, but yet it wasn't quite so magical when the prequels came.
Yeah, I was, let's talk about that for a minute. I was not a fan of the prequels. And there's a lot of reasons why. There, in fact, if you're really into Star Wars, I would strongly recommend there's a great podcast called Rebel Force Radio. Jason Swank, the guy, one of the hosts of it, is actually a Mac Powers listener. I guest on it every once in a while. So he's a Mac geek like us, but he also just is encyclopedic knowledge of Star Wars and so many connections. But whenever I guest on that show and it comes up that I'm not a big prequel fan, sometimes I think he gets a lot of grief for bringing me on, you know, because I'm not a true believer on every Star Wars iteration. But it felt to me like so much of the stuff they got right about the original, they didn't get right with the prequels. I mean, it felt to me like where the originals were innovative with technology, it felt to me like technology was driving the prequels as opposed to a good story. And I wasn't able to invest in the characters. It's like, if you ask people, who are your favorite Star Wars characters? It is very rare that you're going to hear somebody name off a character from the prequels.
Jar Jar?
Well, that's a whole nother topic. At this point, Jar Jar has become something that George Lucas likes to use just to punish people with, I think. But the either way, I mean, it's like Qui-Gon or Queen Amidala. I mean, people just aren't connected to those characters because I didn't think the stories really gave them enough chance to stretch out. Like, you feel like you knew Luke, and I don't feel like I knew those prequel characters the same way. So, and I'm sure people can argue with me on it, but I just was not a fan of this. In fact, it was really tough for me. It's just like you're having trouble right now with the new Star Trek movies. I had a lot of trouble with the prequels, so much, though, that it kind of soiled me on the franchise for a long time. It's like, you know, I felt like as much as I love George Lucas for making Star Wars, I felt like his new vision of Star Wars with these prequels was not consistent with what I wanted and that I was never going to get any more. What are the parts of Star Trek? Because, like, I noticed, for instance, you have not mentioned the entire series that they made with Captain Archer. I forget what the name of that series was.
Oh, Enterprise. I have Enterprise is something that has grown on me with age. I kind of feel like, you know, Gene at least was aware of and at least green lighted and thumbs, you know, gave the thumbs up to clearly Next Generation, Deep Space Nine and Voyager. I know he wasn't very involved in Voyager, but he was aware and that was the universe. And that was what he created. Enterprise, I originally had some philosophical concerns with because that was not canon. That was not in Gene Roddenberry's universe. We don't know. I'm sure something happened before Christopher Pike in the original Enterprise, but we don't know what that was because that wasn't talked about. And at this point, you're just making crap up.
And it's tough because you're in the front of the timeline.
Right. And I understand that everything in Star Trek is made up. I get that. So it's a little circular argument there. But that was the problem that I had with Enterprise and was that I'm not sure that this is supposed to happen this way. And there's no one you can check with to make sure that this is how this is supposed to happen. At least George Lucas had the story in his head of what was supposed to happen in those prequels. I don't think he executed it very well, but I mean, that was the story, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I felt like if someone else had taken the same story and told it differently, it could have been way better. Like, I'm getting deep in the weeds here, but I mean, even like considered the best episodes of Star Wars is episode 5. George Lucas wasn't the writer of that episode. Lawrence Kasdan was, who also wrote episode 7, by the way. And I just wish that he had gone back and hired someone like Larry Kasdan to help him with this stuff. And if you read the like behind the scenes stuff of the original Star Wars, it's clear that he was most miserable writing the scripts. That was never his forte. I mean, at one point, I think Harrison Ford said on the set, you know, George, you can write this, you know what, but we can't say it, you know, and it just needed, I think it needed a lot of work. If the scripts and the story and the character connections had been closer, I think it would have been so much better. There's a YouTube series like What If the Prequels Were Good? I forget exactly what it's called, but somebody told a different story somewhat related to what they told, but just kind of told it in a different light. And I just listened to that saying, this is just a guy on the internet. And he came up with a better way to tell this story than George did. What if he had just hired some smart people to help him?
But to get back to your question about Enterprise, I watched a couple episodes kind of out of obligation when it first came out in 2001. And I stopped. I didn't watch it. I just never could get into it. I went back probably in 2008, 2009, back when Netflix CDs were popular. And I got the series on Netflix and I watched it on Netflix. And I enjoyed it. And I had issues with it. By that point I had processed it and I'd gotten over it. And I realized that while this might, I can enjoy this for what it is. And it was in the spirit of Star Trek and I didn't agree with all of it, but that I can enjoy it. And honestly, that's kind of some of the take that I've taken with, the rebooted Star Trek films. When I walked out of Star Trek, what are we calling it? Star Trek 10, the new J.J. Abrams movie, the first
Beyond?
No, the first one.
Okay, yeah, the reboot.
The very first one. I think it's just called Star Trek, but the very first one.
Yeah.
I was angry. And I'm assuming that it's okay to spoil things because this is a movie that's been out years now. But if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, I'm about to spoil it. But I was very angry at the fact that they have taken what is to me a sacred timeline and just thrown out the window. And I almost felt that it was disrespectful, that things are not supposed to happen this way. You're messing with my timeline. You're messing with the space-time continuum and you better fix it. I kept expecting at the end of the movie for them to go back in time and fix it and make it work the way that it's supposed to work. And I was mad about that for a long time. And then I realized this is what they have to do to make it different, you know?
Yeah. It's like, but for you, like Janeway is your spirit animal, right?
Yeah.
And you grew up with the Next Generation. And at this point, we don't even know if any of that happened.
Exactly. You're saying that my childhood never existed, that these people might never exist.
Yeah, that was the same when the prequels came out. There's a movie called The People versus George Lucas, which goes, in my opinion, way overboard. But the all these people who love Star Wars and they look at the prequels and they're like, you know, I think one of them says George Lucas ruined my childhood. And I'm like, oh, come on, you know, give me a break. But it really is sacred to some of us. And you don't want these things to get messed up. And as fans, we have a certain investment.
Yeah.
So I can understand why you're frustrated with that.
Well,
you're right. You got to treat it as separate, though. Just two different things.
I've eventually come around. It took me a while, but I've eventually come around. And I've realized that I have to enjoy them now for what they are. And now that I've accepted, this is not my Star Trek. This is not my timeline. This is not my thing. I enjoy the movies. I enjoy them as good action movies. I think they're true to a lot of what Star Trek should be. I think a lot of the writing could be better. I mean, Spock was saving Romulus with a big ball of goo. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them have just, and I realize a lot of this is what you have to do now to make big blockbuster action movies. But I think in some cases they've turned away from what made Star Trek so great. But I enjoy them now as what they are. They're not my Star Trek. I would really, really appreciate it if when you're done with them in this next fourth movie, if you fix the timeline.
And it's weird because I saw Beyond. We went and saw it last week. In fact, in preparation for today's show, Katie told me her two favorite Star Trek movies. And I watched them both in the last few days. But the Beyond felt to me like it felt pretty Star Trek-y for the first like 30 minutes or so. And then afterwards, it just felt to me like a
Fast and Furious.
Like a Fast and Furious movie. You know, it's like all the crazy stuff.
So Simon Pegg wrote it. And, you know, he is a huge both Star Trek and Star Wars fan.
Yeah, he's in both movies. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think you have to accept them for what they are.
Yeah. And so what are some of your favorites and of the movies for Star Trek? We talked about the series.
All right. So I've been thinking about this. I think my favorite movies still predominantly feature the original cast. I go back and forth between The Wrath of Khan and The Voyage Home being my favorite. And they're such different. And those were the two that I told you were my favorite. And I think you watched them this weekend because they're very different movies. The Wrath of Khan is a little bit more of an action movie. It's a little bit darker movie. And The Voyage Home is a little bit lighthearted. It's kind of like dessert after, you know, we've been through life and death and life together with Star Trek 2 and 3. And now we get to go save the whales in San Francisco. And
and just kind of see him run around in contemporary land. At least back then it was contemporary.
Yeah. And so that was kind of your respite. And so those two are my favorite. So I'm definitely a fan of the Evens 2, 4, 6 And then probably 8, which is the Next Generation's show that was directed by Jonathan Frakes, who's an excellent director. Leonard Nimoy directed The Voyage Home. Jonathan Frakes. Star Trek has turned out some great directors. Jonathan Frakes directed First Contact. Those are definitely 2, 4, 6, 8 in that order are my favorites.
I think that my favorite Star Trek movie is First Contact. I really enjoyed that movie.
It was a great movie.
It felt like kind of the white whale, because I liked Picard so much I really enjoyed that movie.
And you're going back in time and you're.
Yeah.
You're fixing First Contact. Now, you mentioned that can you rank your Star Wars movies? I agree with you. I think most people agree that the 5 is the best.
I think so. I mean, I remember being a kid, I was like 10. And at the end of 5, I remember saying, that's it. Wait, they took Han and his hand has been chopped off. I was a kid. I was outraged at the end of that movie because I wanted to know what was going to happen. I think 5 is a very good movie. I think 4, because it was the first one, probably is my favorite. I mean, nothing has changed me the way seeing 4 did.
Right.
So I think kind of as a result of that, I would say 4 is my favorite. And the interesting thing is, so with the prequels coming out and George basically saying, hey, you know what? I know a lot of people don't like it, but I'm not making the movie to satisfy a bunch of parasite middle-aged men. I'm making the movies that I think are the appropriate movies for today. And if you don't like it, suck it, So I was feeling like, okay, so we're never going to get a Star Wars movie that I like again. And so I just have to treat it as it was a very special thing at a time in my life. And that's that. And then Disney he sold the company to Disney. And I was very excited about that because Disney has the Marvel franchise and they've managed to turn that into something that's profitable and makes fun and enjoyable movies. And I was thinking, and they understand if they're going to spend $4 billion for this company, they're going to need to recoup it, which means they need to make more movies.
Oh, and they so will.
Yeah. And I feel like that unlike you're unhappy with the reboot of Star Trek, the contemporary one, I'm very happy with the reboot of Star Wars. I think that a lot of people complain about Episode 7, Force Awakens. In fact, we did a little segment on it at the end of a show once, and they say it's too derivative. And I feel like derivative is exactly what it needed to be. I feel like we needed to kind of go back and reground it after midichlorians and the craziness of the prequels.
Well, I think they had to respect the original and they had to get basically all of your people back on board.
And they did in such a big way. I'm like, it's like, when somebody who's lost their religion and come back to it and then they're like more than ever, I am so much, it's like, it's just become a thing for me. I have toys on my desk, Star Wars toys that make, I have a stormtrooper scarecrow in my backyard and I'm actually serious about building my own moisture evaporator. I've completely lost my mind. People come over my house and they're like, what is going on with this guy? But it's so fun. And my daughter's into it. So we have this like thing we do together now. And when the movie came out, that was one of the biggest satisfactions of quitting my job was
being able to devote more time to Star Wars.
Well, no, it's like my daughter, the day the new one was coming out, my daughter said, Dad, we should just do this together. At the old job, there's no way I could have got a day off to go stand in line to see a Star Wars movie. It just wasn't feasible, And this time I was on December 18th last year, my daughter and I at 10 a.m. went and got in line with a bunch of other nerds and we had chairs and we sat there all day and we talked about Star Wars and we had a great time. And it's a memory that I hope she has for the rest of her life. And that kind of stuff is cool to me that we can do that now. And so I'm so much more into it now than I was for a while during those dark years. I'm even into the animated series. They have an animated series called Rebels, which I think is really well done. The people who write it, the guy, Dave Filoni, the guy who's behind it, is super smart. And he makes a show every week that's made for kids that adults can enjoy. And if you like Star Wars, I would say go back. There's only, I think, 2 seasons of it so far. I'd recommend going back and watching it. That's another thing my daughter and I do together, and we enjoy it. And, it's bringing me a lot of happiness having Star Wars back.
I agree with you. I love the reboot. I think The age difference, though, I've seen a lot of people comment that they don't like the original, the what are we going to call it, the prequels, but their kids love them. And so I think that's worth something. If the prequels are bringing a generation that otherwise would not come into Star Wars, I think that's valuable. And I think the same thing can be true about the Star Trek reboot. If this reboot brings in a whole new series of Star Trek fans, I think the world is always a better place with more Star Wars and Star Trek fans.
Yeah, and that was George Lucas's argument to all of us whiners, saying, look, you guys don't like it, but all these kids love it, so they're the ones that matter.
Yeah.
But I still feel that those movies could have been a lot better. But, you know, I'm not going to, like, bang on it too much now that we've got a new set of Star Wars movies coming out. And now we're going to have one a year. I mean, when I was a kid, a new Star Wars movie came out. It was like, it seemed like it was a year before they started thinking about, you know, writing the next one. And now it's going to be this assembly line of movies coming out. Hopefully they're all good, but I'm sure there'll be a few duds. But I am, you know, like you, I want more Star Wars, and I like seeing the mythology grow and the backstory and the universe fill out. So
yeah, I like the what are you calling, like, the 7, 8, 9? What are you calling the numbered ones? Is there a name for those?
Yeah, there is, and I forget it now. It's called yeah, I know there's a name for them, but yeah. But anyway.
But how do you feel about, like, Rogue One?
The standalones.
The standalones. Yeah. Now, I think Rogue One was a good place to start because that very clearly references an event in the first movie. We know that someone stole the plans to the Death Star, and this tells that story. So it's a point of reference.
Yeah, in episode 4, the opening crawl, it says, you know, the Death Star plans were stolen. And that's the very beginning introduction to Star Wars for us, is Princess Leia has the plans and she escapes with them, and R2-D2 gets them in his memory, and then we're off to the races. So this is, how did she get the plans? And that's the story. I think it's going to be difficult for them because not everybody is a super Star Wars nut. And there, some people are going to walk into it thinking that they're seeing
the next movie. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to say, well, what's happening with Rey and Luke? And this is before Rey and Luke are even involved in this mess. And so I think they'll have to figure out a way to kind of, like, transition people to that for normal people. As I understand it, this movie was the instruction to the director was, make a war movie, a Star Wars war movie, you know, like the old, you know, Bridge Over the River Kwai or Guns of Navarone kind of thing, where, you know, it's almost like a heist. We got to steal the plans and it's a war movie. And the, and from what I've seen of the previews and stuff, that's largely what it is. It's not the typical Star Wars. There's not going to be any Jedi in it, from what I understand. But it looks to me like they're faithful to the universe anyway. And I have an open mind about it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. They're also going to be doing the next big one they're going to do out of the, you know, the numbered movies, is they're going to do the Han Solo, like, origin story, and they've already cast it, and that'll start shooting, and then in a couple of years we'll get that movie.
See, I think that is going to feel a little weirder because now they're talking about someone you know. Now they're talking about a character you know, and it's not Harrison Ford. And I know it can't be because of the age. It's going to be a young Han Solo movie, but to me that would feel weird.
I'm open to it. You know, I guess because there were so many years of no Star Wars, I just love the idea that they're swinging the bat. One of the things they did with the Marvel movies that I think is good, my 19-year-old's really into the Marvel movies, and she's never read comic books or anything, but she just likes the kind of the way it all ties together. And if you saw one movie 3 or 4 years ago, some piece of that is relevant to this movie you're watching now. And so that's something we share. We watch those together, but my younger daughter and I are the Star Wars fans. But, the one thing, I lost my trail there, but with the Marvel movies, they take risks, like the Ant-Man movie. I mean, what a dumb idea. A movie about a superhero who turns into the size of an ant, right? You know, mm-hmm. And that was more of almost a comedy heist movie. And so they're trying different genres in this universe. And I think that Disney's going to do the same thing with Star Wars. And I think some of them will be great and some of them won't. But I think they're going to continue to develop the storylines and to continue to swing it. One of the things, my pipe dream, because I talked about how I love Jedis, and I think Obi-Wan generally is the guy who is always trying to do the right thing. And that's a good role model for me. I mean, I always feel like when I have a problem in life, I try to do what's right. And it seems like Obi does the same thing. Right now, if you look at the actor, you know, What's his name now? The actor who played young Obi-Wan.
It's blanking, but yes.
Okay. He's at the age right now where he's the perfect age to play Obi-Wan between the prequels and the old man that found Luke in the desert.
Ewan McGregor. Yes.
Ewan McGregor. There we go. And I know that he stated, hey, you know, it'd be cool to go back to Obi-Wan. What if they made a movie just about Obi-Wan in the desert, you know, while he's waiting for Luke to grow up? Like, in my mind, I have this movie, like one of those old cowboy movies where the guy comes into the town that's being, overrun by the mean, corrupt rancher. And there's this solo guy who walks in and cleans up the town. You know, it's almost like a Western movie. You know, in my mind, my head just spins with all the ideas you can do with a Obi-Wan, you know, in those years movie. And it just, there's so many stories that could be told out there. So, boy, am I happy that it's coming back.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be excited about now if you're a Star Trek and if you're a Star Wars fan. You know, we've got a new Star Trek series coming out. It's been officially dubbed Star Trek Discovery. It's set in the Prime Universe is what they're calling it, which is my universe. Not the messed up one, not the one where the timeline is screwed up.
Is that the official name, the messed up and the Prime?
It's the screwed up in the Prime Universe. But it's going to, CBS is doing something weird for it. I don't know if this is purely a money play or if they feel like Star Trek just is not that popular anymore, so it won't work in prime time. Because, you know, Enterprise was canceled after only a few seasons. It could not make it on prime time anymore. But what they're doing is they're debuting it on prime time on the CBS app. And then it's going to be only available in the United States on the CBS All Access streaming. So at least for some period of time, I'm going to have to pay for the streaming service that will be the only show that I watch on it. I think if you're outside the United States, you'll be able to watch it on Netflix, which will be nice.
Do you see yourself at any point losing interest in Star Trek? I mean, is it, as you get older, are you feel like you're outgrowing it or ready to move on to something else?
No, I will always have Star Trek. In fact, I go back regularly and rewatch them. I won't say quite yearly, but definitely once every 2 years. I have a ritual, and I do this with Star Wars as well, by the way. I have a ritual where I will go through and I will watch from start to finish every one of the movies. And I do that probably over the course of a couple of months. You know, I don't do it one every weekend, but I'll start at the motion picture and I'll go through and watch all the movies. I can't, there's so much Star Trek now between all of the series that I can't do that with everything. But a couple of years ago, I rewatched The Next Generation. Not long after that, I rewatched Voyager. So I'm slowly getting back through it.
Sounds like it's about time you went back and saw Dr. Bashir again.
I think it might be.
I watched the original trilogy many times. You know, I think they call it the new trilogy. I forget. Jason Swank will tell me if I ask him.
Yeah, I went back and watched the prequels a couple of when I rewatched the trilogy. I watched the prequels and I was just like, I think that was the first time I had watched them since they came out.
Yeah. I have a little funny story on that. When episode 7 was coming out, I just said, okay, I'm going to watch everything from start to finish again. So I went back and watched the original, the prequels. I watched it in order. I had never watched 1 through 6.
Now, what order? This is very important. Did you watch them in? Did you watch them in 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3? I'm sorry, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
They have, now I feel like I'm letting my Star Wars geek fans down because they have names for the different like play sequences. They have like the reverse half Nelson. They all these weird names they use for the different viewing. But I had never watched 1 through 6 straight. And to be honest,
what you shouldn't.
Well, I'd never watched 1 through 3. Well, I know the big spoiler of who Luke's father is, so it's okay. I had never really watched 1 through 3 since they'd been in the theaters. So I just went back and I had a bad taste from the beginning of those movies and I didn't want to think about them. I kind of wanted to pretend that they didn't happen and just stick with my memories of the original ones. And, you know, that little kid swinging the cardboard tube in the front yard. So I went back and watched them again and they made me mad. Honestly, they just made me mad. I like the way Anakin falls to the dark side because he thinks his girlfriend might be getting sick and, it just felt to me like it was awkward and done so poorly that I needed to go back and watch the original trilogy, and that made me feel a lot better. And then that led up to the new, the new episode 7. But I don't know what to do about it. I have, they had a deal where you could buy on iTunes the whole package on a discount. So now I own the original trilogy and the prequels. I don't know if I'm going to have to go back and watch them or not. It's going to be hard.
Well, we talked about in the last episode, you've got this new godchild now. I guess the question is, when the time comes, what order will you show that child the movies in?
Generally, I didn't really show, like, my daughter, my children were both born via C-section for a variety of reasons. And so when my second one came, we knew it was going to be a C-section. And
so what are you saying? You did this like in the delivery room? No.
I'm getting there. But you know, both times I learned with my first child that my wife had major surgery to have this child, and she was not really fit to do a whole lot the first week or so. So, you know, the first week that this baby's born, you're going to be Mr. Mom, and it's up to you, you know, let her recover and you just take care of the baby. So I knew when the second one came around that it was going to be time to take good care of this baby for a week. And that week, this was in 2001, George Lucas had released one of the many box sets of the original trilogy of Star Wars. And the, so it was a VHS. I don't remember if it was the enhanced edition. I don't remember when it came out. I'm definitely of the camp that says Han shot first, if you're thinking about that. But either way, so I'm up in the middle of the night with this baby, and I would sit there and rock her and watch Star Wars at like 2 a.m. while I'm dealing with this little fussy new baby. And for some reason, I recently told my daughter that. I said, well, you know, that was the first movie you watched was Star Wars. I think I told her that while we were sitting in line to watch episode 7 out in front of the theater. And my wife told me that she had overheard her bragging to her friends that, yeah, I saw Star Wars when I was one day old. I never did show her, to answer your question, I never did show her the prequels. When she got older, her friends were telling her about the prequels, and I told her about it, and we watched them together. And I tried not to be judgy with her, but she knows how I feel about them, and she's not as big of a fan of the prequels either.
Yeah, I am. I'm wondering, that will be like a point of contention with my future spouse there is only one proper way that we can introduce somebody to Star Trek and Star Wars, and that is the way that I was introduced to it. And I think it's grounds for divorce if you don't agree with me.
Yeah, I think that's a deal breaker for you, Katie.
It is.
Sounds like.
So, I mean, like, when I have...
He's perfect in every way, but he likes the prequels. You're like...
When I have my list of questions, I'm like, you know, when the ring comes out, I'm like, I have a few questions first. Hang on.
Yeah. You have a checklist in OmniFocus.
Yeah.
I predict that.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of the prequels. I don't like to, you know, it sounds so lame, though, to be like, oh, the prequels, blah, blah, blah. If you enjoy them, then enjoy them. I'm not trying to take that away from you any more than I would want someone to take away the joy I had with those original movies. But it's just not my thing. And for whatever reason, the new movies are pushing my buttons in ways the prequels didn't. And that is what I'm happy about.
I'm looking up Wikipedia, Alexander Siddig, who is the actor who played Julian Brashear. Who happens to be single right now and is...
Well, there we go.
Yeah, he's a little old for me, but he still looks pretty good.
I bet he does. I saw him in Game of Thrones. it was a rough time for him, though. I'm not sure you should watch it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we've been going on for almost an hour here. Anything else we need to talk about that's pressing? I mean, you and I could talk for a week about Star Trek and Star Wars. I have no question about that.
I would say if you're a Star Wars fan, that's what I'm here representing, and you want to get deeper into it, I would recommend that Rebel Force Radio podcast is a great listen. And they do a series on there called Star Wars Oxygen. And the guy who does it is a professional musician. He did music for some of the games, and he's just a super smart guy. And he takes apart the George Lucas soundtrack one little bit at a time. And it is amazing. Like, he figured out that the tonal variant between Rey's theme and Kylo Ren's theme is not that far off. And like, he takes it apart musically. And if you have any background in music, you will just absolutely adore this podcast. It's called Star Wars Oxygen, part of the Rebel Force Radio Network. And the other thing I would recommend if you're a big Star Wars fan and you haven't tried it yet is watch Star Wars Rebels. It will surprise you. It's supposed to be a kid's show. It will surprise you at how good it is and how deep the stories are.
There are a couple of great resources for Star Trek. I mean, they're all over the web. And the beauty is Star Trek is back and Star Wars is back. They're both back. Rod Roddenberry was on our show, and he's involved in both the reboot Star Trek Discovery that is coming out, as well as he supports the Mission Log podcast, which is a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast that is hosted by a couple of guys that we know. And that's where they go through the entire Star Trek series from the original series through Next Generation and all the way through. Their latest episode is on the Star Trek The Next Generation episode Disaster, which is the one where Picard gets stuck in the turbo lift with the three kids.
Yes, I love that. That was a good one.
And then, of course, on the Incomparable Network, which is kind of, I guess, kind of like our sister network, they have Random Trek, which is where they, instead of going through in order, they go through they randomize all of the Star Trek that is out there and pick a show at random. So you never know what you're going to get any given week.
Yeah, and the Incomparable Network has done some real just banner, super long Star Wars reviews as well over the years.
Yeah, I think they've done about 2 hours on the 2 minute trailers that have come out.
The other one I would say, if you are like me and you like to make fun of the prequels, there's a Flophouse episode that takes on episode 2, and it is hilarious.
All right, well, I'm sure we will get a lot of feedback about this particular episode. And if you'd like, you can send that to feedback@MacPowerUsers.com. We probably will not follow up on it in a regular Mac Power User show because it doesn't fit with it. But if you want David and I to read it, we certainly will. We also want to say a very special thank you. If you're listening to this show, you are a supporter of Relay FM. Maybe you support one of the other shows. Maybe you specifically support Mac Power Users. Maybe you're a supporter of all the great shows on Relay. But David and I just want you to know that we genuinely appreciate that. Your support that you send every month or every year to Relay through that does come directly to the host. And it does make a difference. And we really appreciate it every month.
Making Mac Power Users is one of the best things I've ever done in my life, and I thank you all for making it possible.
Right. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Katie Floyd. David is at Mac Sparky. Our show, again, is Mac Power Users. We produce a show every week. It typically comes out on late Sunday night or early Monday morning, depending on your time zones. And if you're new to us, this is not what we normally talk about, but we hope that you'll check us out and subscribe. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you all next time.